Like a glove. Joy, my dream, tell me yes. Feel out, should there be a mess. The pieces you don't need of mine. Take my time. I'll show you cloud nine. Take my smile. My heart, they rose from the start. This is the meaning of mine. Have my love. Use it while it does you good. Share my highs, but the times that it hurts, pain of mine. Pieces you don't need are mine. I'll see you there on cloud nine.
good to be shown. You may make it on your own. If you want to quit, that's fine. While you're out looking for a cloud nine,
bird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see. This moment to be free. You were only waiting for this moment to be free. You were only waiting for this moment to be free.
Thank you. Thank you. That was Blackboard.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn, America's liberal voice with music. Stay tuned. Erica Richards is next. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Sounds with Billy Shears.
Hello, I'm Mr. Red.
A horse is a horse, of course, and no one can talk to a horse, of course. That is, of course, unless the horse is the famous Mr. Ed. Go right to the source and ask the horse. He'll give you the answer that you endorse. He's always on a steady course. Talk to Mr. Ed. People yakety-yak the street and waste your time of day. But Mr. Ed will never speak unless he has something to say. A horse is a horse, of course, and this one will talk to his voice, his horse. You never heard of a talking horse? Well, listen to this.
I am Mr. Ed.
At this moment, more than 800 million people are hungry. Millions more live in poverty, and you wonder, what can I do? Join the thousands of caring people who let Heifer International be their helping hands in the world. Right now, from Appalachia to Zimbabwe, Heifer is helping thousands of families become more self-reliant through the gifts of livestock and learning. Heifer provides farm animals that produce milk, eggs, and other products. That means milk to drink and products like cheese to sell. Having income means families can have better housing and health care, and their children can go to school. And recipients share their success, passing on the gift of their animal offspring to other families in need, ensuring dignity, self-reliance, and hope for the future. Find out how you can make a difference today at heifer.org. That's HEIFER.org.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95? Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Polar bears live in the Arctic, on the ice.
But the ice is melting because of global warming.
Some polar bears have to swim so far they drown. Baby bears have died.
When I'm old, when I'm 45, all the bears could be gone.
Grown-ups should do something.
If you're a grown-up, go to polarbearsos.org now. You can make sure polar bears are protected under the Endangered Species Act.
Please help them.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and to be heard. WD40.com, your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
This is a Night Sounds Encore presentation on the Head-On Radio Network, The Horn. From the Night Sound Studios, here's Charm City's very own, sassy and classy, Erica Richards.
Thank you for joining us here once again for Night Sounds Dedications. Our first dedication comes to us from Anne Marie in Tennessee to Jason. I wish you felt the same way for me as I feel about you. He's Invisible by Taylor Swift. From Leslie in South Florida to her husband Daniel. She says, please play something we can snuggle up to. We listen to your show every week. Well, Leslie, thank you. And for you and your husband, here's Slow Dancing by Johnny Rivers.
one's coming, no one's gone. The telephone, just me and you, and the lights down low, and we're slow dancing, swaying to the music. Slow dancing, just me and my girl. Slow dancing, swaying to the music. No one else in the whole wide world. Just you. Just flow together, lights alone. Shadows dancing all across the wall. Music's playing so soft and slow. Rest of the world so far away and small. But we're slow dancing, swaying to the music. Slow dancing, just me and my girl. Slow dancing, swaying to the music. No one else in the whole wide world.
From Debbie in New Jersey to Phil. We would love to hear Don't Let Me Be Lonely Tonight by James Taylor. She says, P.S. It's our song.
Do me wrong, do me right. Tell me lies, but hold me tight. Save your goodbyes for the morning light. But don't let me be lonely tonight. Say goodbye and say hello. Sure enough, good to see you, but it's time to go. Don't say yes, but please don't say no. I don't want to be lonely tonight. Go away then, damn you. Go on and do as you please, yeah. You ain't gonna see me getting down on my knees. I'm undecided and your heart's been divided. You've been turning my world upside down. Do me wrong, do me right.
I don't want to be lonely tonight.
Well, that does it for this week's Night Sounds Dedications. Thank you for all your emails and requests. And remember, if there's a song you'd like me to dedicate to someone, email me, ericarichards@billyshearsmusic.com. Or I'd like to thank everyone out there who's listening, and I'd like to dedicate a song to all you lovebirds who are snuggling up out there, like Leslie and Daniel. He's Lone Star with Amazing.
Inside me, it's almost more than I can take. Baby, when you touch me, I can feel how much you love me, and it just blows me away. I've never been this close to anyone or anything. I can hear your thoughts, I can see your dreams. I don't know how you do what you do. I'm so in love with you. It just keeps getting better. I wanna spend the rest of my life with you by my side. Forever.
Gentlemen, the Beatles!
Chains, my baby's got me locked up in chains, and they ain't the kind that you can see. Whoa, these chains of love got a hold on me. Yeah. baby's got me locked up in chains. And they ain't the kind that you can see. Oh, these chains of love got a hold on me, yeah.
Please believe me when I tell you your lips are sweet. That I'm missing the lips I'm missing, and hope that my dreams will come true. And then while I'm away, I'll write home every day, and I'll send all my loving to you. All my loving I will send to you. Close your eyes and I'll kiss you. Tomorrow I'll miss you. Remember, I'll always be true. And then while I'm away, I'll write home every day, and I'll send all my loving to you. All my loving I will send to you.
Back again. Do do do. other can. Love you like no other, baby, like no other can. I wanna be your man. 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 Tell me that you love me, baby. Let me understand. Tell me that you love me, baby. I wanna be your man. I wanna be your lover, baby. I wanna be your man. I wanna be your lover, baby. I wanna be your man. 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 Wow!
That's it for this week's show. Thank you.
Now get home safely. Good night.
One, two, three, four.
That's Night Sounds for this week. Thank you for spending your evening with us. It is greatly appreciated. To contact us, direct your emails to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. And remember, this is listener support programming, so please go to www.headonradionetwork.com and make a contribution. I'd like to thank Erica Richards for her Night Sounds dedications and all her time behind the mic. The wonderful and very talented Kathy Bay for announcing. John Paul Martin for producing and editing. John Fox for all his help. Peter Godbold for his tech support. Ben Birch at the White Rose Society. And Bob and Agnes Kincaid for all you do at the Head on Radio Network. Good night.
We'll get it right next time.
You've been listening to Night Sounds with Billy Shears. Join us again. Hey. Thanks for lending an ear.
You could say that I have had enough reality. When money rules and only fools believe that they are free. Where politicians lie and innocent people die. And what is real is hard to see. In my dreams I have the means to change the things I see. Who is to say that in a way that's not reality? And when I'm feeling low, I lean on the things I know. And what I know is you and me. That's why I'll never get enough of you. And I'm never not know what to do as long as you. And I will be together. You could say that I have lost my faith in democracy. It might be said of me, you've lost your sense of security. Why do I even sing? Had enough of everything. All comes to nothing in the end. But still I never. Together.
off of the group ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
It was a creed written into the founding documents that declared the destiny of a nation. Yes, we can.
Change will not come if we wait for some other person. A house divided cannot stand. Or if we wait for some other time.
Hope is what led a band of colonists to rise up against an empire.
We are the ones we've been waiting for.
Millions of Americans have been knocked down.
In America, there is no chasm too deep.
This is a time as Americans together.
No barrier too great.
We get back up.
No ceiling too high.
Back up together.
We are not as divided as our politics suggest.
I'm here for the cops and the firefighters.
And we are one people. We are one nation.
The teachers and the assembly line workers.
And together, we will begin the next great chapter in the American story. Thank you. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
I'm not gonna be here long after I'm gone. East and west, I give up all surrender.
Geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here on this gorgeous Saturday afternoon. Before we start things off, I want to wish my son Alex a very happy birthday. Today he has made it. He has officially made his third birthday. His mother didn't kill him yet, so we're very happy about that. Happy birthday, Alex. Got out of the terrible twos. He finally made it to that watershed mark of three.
And he reminded you last week, if I remember, Rick, that when you said he was two, that he's almost three.
Almost.
And I didn't realize he was that close to three.
Yeah, well, here it is. He has reached that milestone. it was in doubt, really, honestly, truthfully, it was in doubt. He is a handful.
Like his father.
Yeah, well, that was one of those things I had hoped for.
Like father, like son.
I had hoped he was going to be more like his mother, but it turns out not so much. But happy birthday, Alex. Can't wait for his big party. See him blow out his candles. And today on the program, Mike Getlin, National Coordinator for the Alliance for American Manufacturing, is going to be here talking about their rally on Monday in Harrisburg to promote buying American and it really encouraging domestic production, something we've been talking about here on the program for a while. I think it's very important. It'll be good to hear Ike's take on this. Also, Marcy Wheeler, a former auto industry consultant and current blogger over at Fire Dog Lake. She's going to be here talking about what's going on with GM and Chrysler and the auto industry as a whole. Also, Kirsty Bergen is going to be here. She is a blogger from the website uniongal.blogspot. So looking forward to talking to her about some issues that she's working on. And also in the second hour, Vivian, a representative of the Workers United. And you talk about workers and their unions. This is an example of a group of people coming together and forming their own union, Jake. This Workers United is a whole new entity, and it's exciting to see that you've got workers who are saying, you know what, we want to join a union, and we're going to create our own thing. And I think that is a great thing. We're going to hear her story. And where this came to national prominence is one of the employers that they were trying to organize actually fired one of the workers. And it was a huge campaign. And, I read a little bit about it. It's IStandWithDiane.com. Where a whole bunch of celebrities came on and said, you know what, you shouldn't be firing workers who want to organize. And they won their first really big victory here. And we're going to talk to her about that a little bit later. And here's the thing. Did anyone see this in the news? Joe the unlicensed plumber came to town. And I got to tell you, I give this guy credit. He's got stones.
Yes, he does.
And, whoever got a hold of him and polished him up did a pretty good job. Because I had about a 15-minute conversation with the guy. And he seemed, when you're talking to him, he seemed very, very knowledgeable. I mean, very, very reasonable. He was a very reasonable guy. A little light on the knowledge, but very reasonable. And he stuck to his talking points. Granted, he was clueless about the topic he was talking about, but then again, so were the other six people who were there to support him. Now, those 250 to 300 people that showed up to let him know he was wrong, they had actually read the legislation and actually knew what they were talking about. What was funny, Jake, is the six people that I did talk to who were there, the anti-employee free choice act people, there were only six of them, all they knew was what they were told to regurgitate. Sacred ballot, sacred ballot. And it was really sad because I was talking to a woman, one of your friends, and she said, you know, it's sad because you look at these people, these six people who are arguing against this piece of legislation, and they probably don't have a pot to go in. And she's right. I mean, you look at these folks and you go, it's amazing to me. And as I was standing there, I was going, you know, look at how easy it is to divide working people. And it made me think of the movie Hoffa. Did you ever see the movie Hoffa?
Yes, great movie.
And there's a scene in the movie where all the workers are down on the picket line.
Danny DeVito.
Yeah, there's thousands of them. And they're down on the picket line, and they're holding their signs, and they're peacefully coming together, women and children there. And all of a sudden, the doors fly open, and thousands of thugs come out with bats and chains and all kind of stuff. And they just start beating up the striking workers. And Hoffa looks up into the ivory tower up at the top where the company officials are all standing with the police chief and all the bigwigs, and they're just looking down, and they close the curtain. Just like, you know, well, we've done our job. And it was that kind of a moment I had where, you know, you could just see someone looking down going, we've done our job. We have created dissension. We have created a situation where people are at each other's throats to our benefit. And I go back to that old John Jake quote, I could easily pay half the country to kill the other half. And that's what it took me back to.
I talked to four or five of them. And I also talked to you and I talked to other people. And every one of them said when they talked to these people, there were two things. Every one of them had the same characteristics. One, they didn't know what was in the bill. And it's amazing that they were there to protest the bill. They didn't even know what was in the bill. And two, they all were anti-union, whether they had were brought up to disparage unions or whether they had a bad experience in a union themselves. Talked to one young woman who was going on what her father told her about unions. He had a bad experience, and after she related it, I didn't think it was all that bad. But in her mind, her father's mind, unions were bad because of what happened. My point is they weren't there really because they really knew anything about the Employee Choice Act. It was just that they were opposed to unions. And there was, I would have to say, there were more than six. But it's generous to say 15 or 20. At the very, very most.
But those, the ones beyond the six that were there, the six that I pointed out were there on their own. They weren't paid. The rest of the people were paid staff. They were paid by this, I don't even know what the euphemistically named group
Americans
is.
For Prosperity.
There you go. But they were paid staff. I only could find six people who were there of their own volition. They decided they were going to come down and they were going to fight for this on their own. And the sad reality is not one of those six had read the bill. In fact, I kept asking the question, well, how long do you think the bill is? And one of them said, probably 1,000 pages. I go, no, it's actually 2 pages. Really? Yeah, really. If you had taken the time to at least look it up, you'd have known that. And when you went through and you tried to educate these people, you could see the light go on in their head like, well, oh, well, that's not so bad. That's not what we're being told. And I think part of the problem here is the mainstream corporate-controlled for-profit media has done an excellent job of clouding this issue. And they've done an excellent job at saying, well, they're going to steal your rights, which is not true at all.
I think they might have stubbed their toe this time, Rick. They brought this guy in for Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania obviously is a critical state because of Specter. Now in Pittsburgh, he met the same fate. You know, hundreds of unionists showed up here. He looked bad. Not only did he look bad, but he was recorded on camera. When some of the union people said, Joe,
it's on our website.
Where, you know, why are you saying this? It's not in the bill. Where are you getting it? Well, I don't know a lot about labor law. Well, that was recorded. It was on MSNBC. And something that wasn't recorded that I was told personally, one of the guys who you hear on the recording talking, asked him, well, where are you getting these ideas? And off camera, Joe said, well, I talked to union people in my neighborhood. Now, whether he did or not, I don't know. So he talked, well, how many? Well, I talked to 15. Let's just say he did. That does make sense if he did, but the point is he really didn't know what was in the bill. I think he was embarrassed. He was supposed to show up at Plymouth meeting that night, didn't show up, and I understand now he's withdrawn from the national campaign. So I think we kind of embarrassed him. If I would have been that organization, I would have been totally embarrassed. Oh, and of course, the right-wing talk show host locally, you heard it on radio, I heard it on radio, they were spinning it by saying, well, you know, it was a bad time of day and people have to work. Well, how about the 200 or more union guys that were there? They have to work too, but they showed up because it was important to them.
Yep. Anyway, we're going to be talking about that and a lot more today. We're going to take a break right here. Kirsten Berghard, she's the blogger over at uniongal.blogspot.com. We're going to be back talking with her. We're right back.
Oxycontin eater to me. It was a bug-eyed, tone-deaf, lying Oxycontin eater.
Right-wing syndicated, spinning liberal people beater.
Right-wing strung-out, hypocrite prescription cheater. Rush looks strange to me.
That guy?
Oh, I'll tell you. Anytime I hear that guy's name, I get frustrated. Anyway, he's announced that since New York is raising their tax rates, he will no longer do any of his shows in the Big Apple. Last year, I guess he did about 15 shows there. The New York Post had a funny little line. He goes, well, the Post said, well, that's one less recovering drug addict for New York. Oh, I'll tell you, amazing. Here's the thing. On the Internet, there's such great information out there. The only problem is finding it, Jake, as you're finding out. Here on the program, we're going to be talking to bloggers from across the Internet. The only people who are really doing any real investigative journalism. And we're going to be talking to them here and getting the stories that they're working on. That's why I've asked Kirsten Berghard. She is the Union Gal. Her website, uniongal.blogspot.com. You can get to there from our site at therickSmithShow.com. Just click on Kirsten's name. Kirsten, welcome to the program.
Hi. Nice to be here.
Let me ask you before we start off with this. Well, why did you start your website? Why did you start uniongal.blogspot.com?
Well, I'm a progressive blogger, and for the most part, I've always blogged on issues related to labor movement. I found that when you talk to other progressives, they're really big on issues like environment or issues related to poverty, and they didn't really make the connection that once you're in a union, that you can actually make a difference in those particular issues.
Right.
They always looked at them as like individual issues. And so I started the blog to actually try to bring our stories out so that other progressive bloggers could better understand.
Yeah, I find that in we're dealing with in the progressive circles that they seem to think the labor movement is something outside of them, a different entity. And I think it's a good thing that we bring all those people back together. You know, the big tent theory, as many people are in the room making decisions, the better off it will be. And I look at your blog and as one of those sites out there that are doing really great work. I'm curious, what stories are you working on right now?
Well, first of all, thanks. Really great work. That's really kind of nice. The one that I've been working on lately has been about the Employee Free Choice Act and how it relates specifically to women. I blogged on Daily Kos the other day about how women are going to be more disproportionately affected by employee free choice, by either passage or, again, non-passage. And the reason behind that is because more men are actually being disproportionately affected by this recession, by being laid off, than are women.
Right.
Because women tend to choose jobs to help support their families. We tend to choose jobs, and I did this as well when I was married, that didn't have benefits or didn't have like a long
pension fund or anything like that.
Right. And the reasons I did that was because it was family-based. You know, I needed certain hours or I needed to do something specific. And I made those choices based on my family situation. So women make those choices all the time that are slightly different than how men make choices in terms of working. So women who make up now about 45% of the unionized labor force, we still make up about 45% of the overall labor force. But with men actually being disproportionately laid off, women are actually growing in the ranks of the labor force. And unfortunately, women are additionally still making significantly less on the dollar than the counterpart who happens to be man.
Well, that's in the non-union segment. I mean, in the union sector,
yeah,
they make the same as a man because it's the same rate.
Yes,
and exactly. I think it's important to clarify because the reality is when you and we ran into this problem here at the station when you have a contract, the wages are laid out in the contract. Everybody knows what their neighbor is making. There's no keeping secrets. There's no being fired for asking what your coworkers are making.
Exactly,
it's very open. It's very transparent, and it doesn't discriminate between man, woman, black, white, anything.
Exactly. And you know, I've been able to meet a lot of really amazing women across the country. My favorite one recently was this woman in Ohio. Her name is Mandy, and she joined IUOE. It was the only union to endorse McCain. I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
She had been working at Goodyear, and she is really good at mechanical stuff. She wanted to be a mechanic. She wanted to drive. She wanted to actually work on cars. So she took this job at Goodyear thinking that she'd be able to work her way up, become certified, and all that other stuff. Except they kept passing her over for promotions into those fields and giving them to men. And after a year on the job, she's like, you promised me this when I came in here. I'm making less than my counterparts, and I can do more. And I can't even get certification. So she applied for this apprenticeship program with IUOE, which put her into driving major machinery. She drives a dump truck.
Wow.
And a bunch of other items as well now. She's been through the apprenticeship program, and I recently had an email discussion with her because she's now working more because of the Recovery Act. The whole stimulus bill is working for her. And being able to tell that kind of story is pretty amazing.
Well, I think what it is it's really changing the way that we look at the workplace. That today, I hope most people view women and men pretty much in the same light, that they can do just about the same things, that there really isn't much different.
Well, I personally agree to that one.
Well, I mean, and this is one of the reasons that I think unions are so important, and I wasn't going to do a whole union segment here, but I think you make a very good point that, you know, this bill, if passed, will benefit women more than it will men.
Well, see, I don't think my only point in talking about EFCA, or Employee Free Choice, which I don't like calling it EFCA, but actually having the right to choose as opposed to your employer choosing for you, that's just a huge issue there. But when it comes to the number of people who are working who would be able to choose, we're really talking about mostly women. And when we start talking about Employee Free Choice and guys like Rick Berman or like Edelman PR, when they come out and they tell you, well, we can't do this right now, recession, 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 what they're really telling you is, look, you need to sit down, you women, don't push for this because, you know, it's just not going to work for us right now. And that's just not acceptable anymore.
I absolutely agree with that.
Employee free choice just isn't about getting the right for employees to do that, to actually make the choice, but it empowers women to make that choice. And the strongest unions I've been in contact with tended to be women's unions. I mean, looking back over history, I'll tell you, ILGW, right?
Yeah, ILGA.
I'm confused for this second. I'm thinking about the Triangle Shirt Factory fire.
Right.
Which recently, we just had the 98th anniversary of it, but the work that those women did and the strength of their union, it's just unbelievably impressive. And the union's still around today. Granted, it's Unite here, and it's now morphed into another one as well. I don't follow those issues. I try not to.
Yeah, it's just alphabet soup, but the reality is...
No, yeah.
I mean, really, I mean, the way they've been merging lately is one of those things that bothers even me. But the reality is I understand what you're saying, that women, right now especially, are the ones who are pretty much your stronger union members, because they're the ones who, for the last 30 or 40 years, have been really getting the short end of the stick.
Yeah.
They're the ones who are saying, look, we want it, and we want it now.
And not only that, but I really do believe that this is a definite issue for women. I really honestly believe that employee free choice is all about women, that we are the ones who are really going to be affected by the passage of this bill. And when people like Spector come out against it, honestly, I look at that as him coming out against women.
No, I gotta tell you,
I just have no other qualms about that at all.
Well, I would tend to agree with you, but I had a conversation with a couple of ladies when Joe the Plumber was in town, and they were animately opposed. They're stealing democracy, you're stealing my right to a secret ballot. And when you asked them, did you read the bill? Well, no. It kind of makes you go, do you know what you're talking about? And the truth of the matter is, unfortunately, they don't know.
No, they don't know.
They've been so badly misinformed, which is why I think it's important for people to do work like you're doing over at uniongal.blogspot.com. You're just laying it out. These are the facts. Investigate for yourself, but this is my opinion, and this is it. And I got to tell you, keep up the good work there. I'm so frustrated at sometimes.
Believe me, I feel your frustration.
I mean, really, I had a conversation. We got about a minute left. I had a conversation with this lady, and I asked her, I said, how long do you think the Employee Free Choice Act bill is? How many pages? Oh, 200,000, 300,000? No, it's 2 pages. You didn't have time to read just 2 pages? Well, and the more you talk to them, and to me, this is a problem with media, and which is why I think it's important that you guys are doing what you're doing. It's a problem with media. They've been spoon-fed this secret ballot thing. Oh, they're going to steal your secret ballot. And they think that that's reality. They've done no investigating of their own. They've not read the bill. They've not talked to anybody else. They've just taken for granted what they've been handed. And I tell you, I think it's important you guys keep up the good work.
Well, thank you. I think what's more important about at least Joe and I is that we're completely independent. Although, as of this coming Wednesday, I will be a member of the... AFGE.
Good for you. Good for you.
I'm really excited. I had to get a ruling from the unions on being represented for a bargaining unit position. I'm very excited about actually being a dues-paying member again.
All right. That's terrific news, and I look forward to hearing how that works out for you. The website, uniongal.blogspot.com. Kirsten, I hope you'll come back in the near future. Love talking to you.
It was great to be here. Thanks a lot, Rick.
You have a great day. We're going to take a break. We're right back after this. 1-877-960-0960, The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Smith Show, 1-877-960-0960. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. The Bureau of Labor Statistics, their numbers are out. More good news, I guess. The economy lost another 660,000 jobs last month. The national unemployment rate has hit a 25-year high at about 8.5%. We've lost 2 million jobs in the first 3 months of this year alone. Compare that with the 3 million that we lost last year. We're looking at 5.1 million jobs lost since December of 2007. And yet we still hear some politicians, mostly from the far right wing of the Republican Party, preaching their free trade ideology, that failed free trade ideology. And on Monday, Jake and I were at the Capitol in Harrisburg for a Keep It Made in America rally put together by the Alliance for American Manufacturing. I've asked Ike Gitlin, the national coordinator for the Alliance for American Manufacturing, their website, AmericanManufacturing.org, to come and talk to us a little bit. Ike, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Rick?
I'm terrific. Let me ask you this. Keep It Made in America, I'd be inclined to say that that title's a little off, considering we've been hemorrhaging millions of manufacturing jobs over the years thanks to the failed business policies that have been the last 30 years. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think, we've got to stop the flow of blood, and then we've got to turn it around. We've got to rebuild. This country cannot do without a manufacturing sector. We're finding that out. And we can't do with a manufacturing sector that doesn't pay well. We just have to have an economy that has that pizza. Everybody else understands that and hangs on to their manufacturing sector. And we've just got to straighten out something that we've been wrong about for a long, long time now.
So let me ask you, what brought you to Harrisburg?
Well, Harrisburg, the House of Representatives passed 190-0 in a bipartisan move, a resolution that we've been pushing in the country that says that money that's coming from the stimulus plan will in fact be bought in America, goods and services, and that if somebody looks for a waiver under that, that waiver will be publicly posted and disclosed so that we can take a look at it and see if it's justified. That resolution now has been introduced into the state Senate, and we're making our rounds in the state Senate to talk to our state senators about doing another bipartisan action and passing that resolution fairly quickly. If any of your viewers out there have an opportunity, we'd sure appreciate them contacting their state senator and urging them to vote for it.
We'll make sure that we remind people of that. But let me ask you, aside from the obvious that we could be saving our families and our jobs, why buy American? I mean, as a consumer, I can get a bunch of cheap plastic crap from China for just a few bucks at the local Walmart. It benefits me. Why buy American-made products?
Well, it appears as though it's cheaper. The Alliance for American Manufacturing put a early piece of research on the table that you can pull down off their website that studied 9 different industries and the long-term impact. And when you consider things like what happens to taxes, what happens to personal income, what happens to communities, and what happens to a number of different things, if in fact good manufacturing jobs leave an area, it's pretty clear that we're a net loser, and it doesn't take that long to rack up the numbers and show that, in fact, if you don't have good jobs and if you don't have a good manufacturing base, that cheap T-shirt that you bought comes back and bites you about 10 times over.
Well, let's talk about the Buy American provision in Obama's stimulus package, because I think it's important that our listeners understand exactly what it is that they're proposing.
Well, the Buy American provision in the stimulus, I'd like to step back a little bit and sort of talk a couple numbers to put it in perspective. You've got an $800 billion, almost $1 trillion stimulus package. And within that package are a number of different types of spending. And when you spend on infrastructure and when you spend on goods and services that go back into the private economy, that's the most effective way to spur jobs. We've got another report on that website that talks about the value of infrastructure-type spending, and you get about a 25% more kick in terms of jobs and money flowing through the economy out of an infrastructure manufacturing kind of a dollar spent than you do if you spend it on a tax credit or if you spend it on some other service. And so that's why it's critically important to take a look at the infrastructure piece. Now, the stimulus itself, its purpose is to try to kickstart the American economy. And so you've got numbers here. You've got a $14 trillion American economy. You're trying to kickstart it with an $800 billion stimulus package. And the most effective piece of that is $111 billion that you're spending on infrastructure. So you're really trying to roll a pretty big rock with a small lever. And so it's critically important that every possible dollar of that $111 billion go back into the economy in the most effective way. I don't think it takes any kind of Harvard economist to understand that if we borrow money, which we're borrowing all the stimulus money overseas, we don't have it. So you borrow money from places like China and India, you run it through our governmental bureaucracy, and you spend it out at the bottom by buying stuff overseas, back from the same people you borrowed the money from, that's kind of financial insanity. And you might as well just do the interest payment and not do it at all if that's what you're going to do. So I hope that makes some sense and sort of, you know, puts it on the line why it's so important to have these dollars spent in the right way. And the right way is to buy American and as much as you can. And as you buy American, you solidify what's left of the American manufacturing sector, and then they can start to invest and they can start to rebuild.
Yeah, but but the stuff that we're hearing from the right wing, from the business communities, are that manufacturing isn't in trouble. Everything's just fine. Doesn't need any help. Things are just great.
Well, you know, in the report that you just talked about, of those jobs that were lost in the last month, 161,000 of those were manufacturing jobs. Manufacturing in Pennsylvania is about 15% of the economy. That's very significant. And it's bleeding red ink. There's probably 25 to 30% of the manufacturing workforce that's now laid off, some of it temporary, some of it permanent. Those are huge numbers, and these are the good jobs. These aren't the jobs at the bottom of the spectrum. These are excellent jobs. And that's a concern for middle-class America, but it's also very much of concern to folks who are trying to climb up the ladder. Because if you're taking away the better jobs, there's nowhere to climb. The rungs are being pulled out. And I think what people are starting to get a handle on is that if you take away your better jobs, if you take away the jobs that have good pensions and have good health care and have decent wages and people have some discretionary money, then when you come to a period like this where there's a downturn, you really fall through a hole. They've pulled out what's there. So that normally in a time like this, people would, you know, sort of dip into their savings and start spending. Well, what's happened is people have tried to maintain their lifestyles, even though the amount of money that they're really being paid in real dollars has dropped. So they've done it with credit. And so both nationally and personally, we've become, you know, we've lived our lives on a credit card. And so now that we have this tremendous problem, we have no savings to go back on. We're going to have to borrow even more to get ourselves out of this. And that's because we've allowed our good jobs to go away and our manufacturing sector to be hollowed out.
I agree with you. But let me ask you this, because one of the big hysterical statements I keep hearing is, "Oh, we don't want to start a trade war. We don't want to get into a smooth holly. We don't want to get into a trade war because you know we are so much of our income, so much of our manufacturing is dependent on export." What do you say to that?
Well, you know, it's really a hysteria and a very misleading kind of thing. First of all, we're not really talking about trade here. They would like to make it into a trade argument because there's some greedy folks out there. But the truth of the matter is this is a matter of economics. This is a matter of your corn that you've got $111 billion of seed money that you're putting back into the economy to try and kickstart it. And once you kickstart it, then, you know, you can go back and buy, you know, from wherever you were buying before unless we can start to rebuild the American economy. But the flip side of that is that if you eat your seed corn, you don't kickstart the economy and nobody wins out of it. Now, a lot of manufacturing folks understand that. The Alliance for American Manufacturing is made up of both unions and manufacturers that understand the need to get America's economy going. And America's economy is the largest in the world by far, so if it doesn't go, the globe doesn't go. And so it's very short-sighted of folks to say that we shouldn't be doing what we're doing on this Buy American campaign. Now, down the road, there's a larger discussion that we've got to have and a larger debate about our trade policy overall and how much of the economy we can afford to hand away to other places in the world before we become a third world power ourselves. But that's not what this immediate thing is about.
Right. You know, I look at the fact that we're close. Last year, almost $1 trillion in trade imbalance. That's a huge problem, isn't the way I see it.
Well, yeah, and it is, and then, you know, it's debt, it's living on plastic, but there's other impacts to it. If you look at it environmentally, we have by far a much cleaner industrial base than anywhere else in the world. So as we transfer our goods and services production overseas, where the environment and the environmental controls and the environmental laws and the environmental enforcement is much, much poorer, what you end up with is much more pollution because what's being produced is being produced in a much more polluting way. And so we not only export jobs, but we import the pollution around the world and make the global warming and the rest of it a lot worse. And as a result of that, in California right now, about 25% of the pollution can be traced back to China. And that's only going to get worse if you continue to destroy our cleaner, greener manufacturing with more polluting manufacturing than other places in the world. So there are tremendous side effects of this for both socially and globally that go far beyond just economics.
We're here with Ike Gitlin. AmericanManufacturing.org is the website. We've got about 30 seconds left, Ike. What do you want me to do? What should Rick Smith do? What should my listeners do? How do we get this? Sounds like a great idea. How do we move forward?
Well, what we've got to do is in every town and municipality and county, we ought to get these resolutions passed. And you can pull them down off the Steelworkers website, which is usw.org. Or the AAM website. There's a kit there to do that. Call your state senator. Urge them not only to vote for this, but also to get others to vote for it. And get involved. Get involved in the trade debate. Get involved in what we're doing. This is a time for citizenship. This is a time for us to stand up. We've had a tremendous election. We've had a change in direction. But, Obama and the folks that have got elected can't do it by themselves. We can't just walk away from this. We've got to make our thoughts known. We've got to consider the issues. And we've got to get active. And I just urge every American citizen to pay maximum attention and do their job as a citizen.
And push their politicians and elected leaders to do what they know is right and what they really want to do. Ike, I appreciate you taking time for us.
I appreciate being on, Rick, and good luck. You got a tremendous show, and the work you do is very, very important to everybody.
Thanks so much. Alliance for American Manufacturing, their website, AmericanManufacturing.org. You can get there from our site at TheRickSmithShow.com. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. 1-877-960-0960. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. The question is, where's a conservative when you need one? You want to talk about wasteful government spending? The Department of Homeland Security, Jake, get this, spent $16,000 to publish a book and CD set of the complete history of all the speeches given by former Department of Homeland Security head Michael Chertoff. My first reaction is, one, who cares? And second, if someone really wanted to know what Skeletor had to say, they could have gotten it online for free. I'll tell you, wasteful, wasteful. Before we move on with what you've got, Jake, I got a call on line one. How you doing today, Rick?
Hey, pretty good, Rick. Hey, Jake.
Hey, how you doing, Rick?
This is a comment. I was had the pleasure of being out on the Capitol steps when Joe the plumber made his appearance the other day. I think it was just a fantastic day for labor. Good, the sun was shining. Police actually had a guy on the building across the street way at the top looking down at us. It was kind of funny, and there were only about maybe 20 or 30 conservatives there. There was a woman standing on the steps. We were to the right of the stage as you face it, and where we were chanting, "Go home, Joe," whatever, she looked at me and told me to shut up. she said she couldn't hear the guy speaking, and I suggested maybe if she stood in front of the stage and the speaker, she could hear the guy. But it was kind of interesting. The thing I called about, there was a guy there, he was wearing a Century 21 badge on his jacket, and he was yelling around, who's paying your, who employs you? Who's paying your salary? As if, we wouldn't have a right to speak about the card check because we somehow should have some allegiance to the person paying us as if they were doing some grand favor. And I think, some people, the right wing, whether on purpose or not, gets people, I call it on the ropes. They get people to be defensive, like, oh yeah, the guy's giving me a job. Hey, I think there's two sides of that street, and they're darn lucky to have us. And that's what I call that guy. I said, who cares who's paying you? They're damn lucky to have us here doing what we do.
Absolutely.
How about that?
Agreed.
The guy didn't have a response. So we're used to being defensive, We're like on the down elevator. We got to get back up, and hey, you're lucky to have us. Wait a minute.
Exactly.
It wasn't for people like us doing the job. We do trucking, either you're in, or, whatever, confections, as Jake was, or me flying, whatever it is, you know, they're darn lucky to have us, and I think we need to stand up and respect ourselves a bit more on that subject.
I absolutely agree. Like I talked about last week, I think the American worker has got some form of post-traumatic stress disorder, kind of like a battered worker syndrome.
Yeah, right. I hear people saying, I hate when they say, well, I'm lucky to be working. Well, it's good that you are, but don't let that somehow, you know, cloud your, you know, your view of yourself and who you are just because your company doesn't happen to be in some form of distress, or at least not yet. But we gotta, you know, we have respect for ourselves. And I think as long as the other side has continued to badger people, I think there was a big effort in the early 80s to make the American worker feel bad about themselves because I remember Brian Bosworth, the football player. He bragged about how while he was on his college break, he used to put soda cans in the doors of Chevrolet Vegas. Ha ha ha! You know, and it was all. I remember seeing a lot of television where they had the Japanese workers working at Toyota or Honda, wherever it was, in Japan, and they all go out and do calisthenics together in the same colored jumpsuits, as if, you know, somehow their way of doing business was better than the U.S. And as a result, our manufacturing wasn't that good. Well, it certainly wasn't the hourly people making these design flaws and these engineering problems. It wasn't the workers. It wasn't the Indians. It was the chiefs. And I think the most telling thing was back in when I was in the car business, back in the early 80s, they built the first Honda plant in the United States. It was in Spring Hill, Tennessee, the same place where Saturn is. And the odd statistic, the interesting thing was that Honda plant in the United States had a 10% better quality rating than the last one they built in Japan. So clearly it wasn't the workers. But American industry thought, you know, whoever they employed to start this, you know, PR game against the workers, they had a vested interest in making people think they were less, they weren't that good, so that when they went to the bargaining table, they'd take less. And I think we need to really make sure we value ourselves to the degree that we should and say, hey, they're darn lucky to have us. It isn't just that they're just some grand favor by, you know, giving us a job.
Spot on. Well said. I mean, you hit it right on the head. It is this PR game to make you feel bad. And they're doing the same thing against the auto workers now, trying to blame them for the current crisis with GM and Chrysler.
No, it's ridiculous. My father, God rest his soul, worked for 44 years at General Motors, a stamping plant, Buick Olds Cadillac in LaGrange, Illinois, a suburb of Chicago. And he told me, he said, Rick, buddy, you know, he says, back in the day when they stamp out 40,000 fenders, you know, and then they, because they didn't use them right away, they would find out about the flaw too late. And he says, you know, they've got bad engineering, people are mocking us about working for GM. And he was a craftsman from Lithuania, an immigrant. And they wanted to do good work and feel good about themselves, but, you know, it was very easy for GM to blame, somehow say the workers were at fault when they had design flaws, and now, of course, things have changed. They make the fenders and they use them 2 days later, so there's a flaw, they can find it. But a lot of it had to do with engineering, but they were trying to beat those guys down, and women, men and women all the time, and I think it's come back to bite them, and I hope people come around and realize, hey, man, they're lucky to have us.
Yeah, I hope so, too, Rick. I appreciate the call, buddy.
Hey, no sweat. Take care. See you, Jake.
All right. Thanks. And he's spot on, Jake. I mean, and we talked about this last week. You know, the reality is it's this browbeating that's happened to the American worker, and it's got to stop.
And you know, that ties into, you know, how they treated the workers in the auto industry as compared to how they treated the executives in the financial field. Double standard.
Yep. Anyway, I wanted to go back to what we were talking about with Ike Getlin, because I think it's important. You've got a story that just defies the imagination that how anyone in this country, I mean, honestly and truthfully, how anyone in this country could have the gall to do what you're about ready to talk about.
Well, it couldn't have come at a better time of the story as far as tying it in Ike's interview. There's a local company called PBG Industries in South Middleton. And apparently they put in a contract for the first 20 floors of the what used to be the Freedom Towers that were destroyed and they're building it up. There's been $3 billion of public money invested in this project. The Port Authority of New York and New Jersey awarded it to two companies, Solero Construction and DCM Erectors. They had the joint venture. Unfortunately for this local company, this company had to write the subcontract. As I said, this company invested hundreds of thousands of dollars to modify their plant. They thought they had a good shot at it. Well, guess what? They gave it to China. They gave it to China. And this isn't just window panes, Rick. I mean, you're talking about ultra-clear sapphire glass, extra strong, very hard to produce high quality. An American company went out of its way. It had the wherewithal at a reasonable price, and they give it to the Chinese. It makes you wonder, what kind of quality are we going to get? Are we going to get into a situation with some of the products coming from China that we find the quality isn't there? The safety, you got to understand now that there's got to be safety involved in this, because some of this glass is going to be used high up. What about the cost of transportation from China? You know, it makes you wonder why they did get the country. It just doesn't make sense. And then,
well, beyond that, I mean, stop and think about this. Just
the national significance.
Just from the fact that you're talking about the aftermath of 9/11, this horrible tragedy, and how the Bush administration did a really great job of exploiting that, and how corporate America has done a great job of exploiting it. And now, what you're telling me here is that corporate America is now saying, well, you know, it's a good PR scheme when we had it, but now we're gonna extract it from we're gonna patronize somebody else.
I was gonna make that point. You know, after 9/11, and you made this point several times, Rick, and you were spot on. I think America was at its best. We are at its best when we rally and we come together in a national emergency, and we did for a short time until George Bush blew that. But here you have a national tragedy, and it's like we're throwing it right in their face, the victims. What did they die for? So that we could replace the very buildings that they died with Chinese work, replacing American workers. I mean, where's our sensibilities? When does it stop? When are we going to stop worshiping at the altar of ideology and start looking out for America first? It just defies. It makes you wonder. It really does.
It disgusts me. Let's take a quick call. We got Anthony on line two. How are you doing today, Anthony?
Fine, sir. I just wanted to pass along something on the one point that you're making. Since we still have this war on terror, or whatever they want to call it, why don't we make sure that anything that's dealing with that is manufactured by American hands? You know, like night vision and weaponry or whatever. Why don't we start there? Because they're fighting to. It's Americans who are fighting to defend themselves, so why don't we just use American products too?
I absolutely agreed. And the thing is we've actually got legislation for that. I mean, the Berry Amendment says that we have to buy American made goods to service the military. It's been in place since 1941. The problem is
nobody's pushing it through.
The problem is nobody is enforcing it.
That's what I meant to say.
In fact, Bush didn't even know what somebody was talking about when the question came up. And you're right on. We should be buying all of the things that our military needs from American companies. Absolutely. I agree with you spot on.
Yeah, well, that's just one point I would like to make, because we're trying to get where we're doing our manufacturing from America. So we can start there, and then, of course, with this infrastructure, Obama wants to make sure that everything's done in America here, and that's what we should keep on doing, because we're only hurting ourselves tonight.
Absolutely.
Before, we ended up borrowing money from foreign countries because we're broke. We wouldn't be that broke if we were doing our own manufacturing and making money there.
That's exactly right. If we wouldn't have given away trillions of dollars in tax dollars to the wealthiest in this country, we wouldn't be in this mess. If we didn't allow the criminals on Wall Street to run our economy, we wouldn't be in this mess. It all comes down to the basic fact that we cannot allow a handful of people to run this country the way it's been going the last couple of years. And I agree with you, Anthony.
Thank you, sir.
You have a good day. You know, and it comes right back to that, Jake. It comes right back to the fact that you need to produce the things that you use in your country. You need to be self-sufficient. And, you know, the conservative movement has taken us away from that. And I say it all the time. Go back and read Ronald Reagan's speeches when he was running for president in 1980. He laid this out. He said, look, I want the American economy to be a service-based economy. Look where we are right now. We are a service-based economy. But where you survive in manufacturing. You make money in manufacturing. You make money from selling goods. You make money from adding value to raw materials. Right now, we're sending raw materials to China so that they send us finished products. That is insanity. absolute insanity. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. 1-877-960-0960. We'll be back with Marcy Wheeler from Fire Dog Lake.
Get a job you ain't even qualified for. You may even get out of fighting in a war. And you may live your whole life, never have to sweep a floor. Lord, but Jesus don't give tax breaks to the rich. Lord God, no. Jesus don't give tax breaks to the rich. Oh, and you get to heaven and you're not.
Cause in the real world they're shutting Detroit down. While the boss man takes his bonus pay and jets on out of town. DC's bailing out the bankers as the farmers auction them down. Yeah, while they're living it up on Wall Street in that New York City town. Here in the real world, they're shutting Detroit down.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-877-960-0960. From an AP story, Ford Motor Company announced Wednesday that March sales in the U.S. dropped 40.9% from the same month a year ago, but rebounded sharply from February levels. The number two automaker said it delivered 131,465 new vehicles in March, highlighting the collapse in the auto sales in response to this deepening recession. Ford also said sales increased 30% from February 2009, with total sales up 34%. So the question here is, what do we do with the auto industry? I mean, we're seeing just across the board trouble, not just in the American auto industry, but also the foreign automakers as well. I've asked Marcy Wheeler, who has written extensively on the issue over at FireDogLake.com, to come and talk to us. Marcy, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, thanks for having me.
Let me ask you this. You know, I hear the Republicans, their laid path on this, like that of Congressman Zach Womp, pretty much just saying, let the U.S. automakers fail. Why is that a bad idea?
It's a bad idea because that's 3 million U.S. jobs. Once you think about the automakers themselves, the suppliers, the add-on effect, you'd basically shut down much of the Midwest. But you would have the auto dealers in your hometown going out of business. They're already really under stress. So you would see massive job losses all across the country.
So I hear a lot of people saying, you know, well, we're just throwing good money after bad. They're in big trouble. What are we doing? What is Obama doing about this, and is it any different from what Bush did?
It is slightly different from what Bush did, and I understand what people are saying. We're just throwing good money after bad. But one of the things, first of all, that ignores is that all over the world, countries are giving support to their auto manufacturers at this time, and yet for some reason in the United States, that's not acceptable. I mean, you know, throughout Europe, you're seeing that kind of support from the industries. And so to some degree, if all of the auto industry worldwide is in this shape, and if every other country is supporting their manufacturers to this degree, then we're already at a competitive disadvantage because everybody else is getting money from their own companies, their own countries. So
right.
As to what Obama's doing, you know, he gave the kind of ultimatum to GM and Chrysler last Monday, which basically said GM has 60 days, Chrysler has 30 days. At the end of 30 days, if Chrysler hasn't, you know, arranged a marriage, it's kind of a shotgun wedding with Fiat, then Chrysler's going to be put into bankruptcy. If at the end of 60 days, GM is going to, if they haven't gotten their creditors to renegotiate, UAW to renegotiate, then they're going to be put into kind of a controlled bankruptcy. The difference between what Obama's doing and what Bush is doing, and it's not, you know, it's kind of thin gruel from my perspective in Michigan, but one thing is he's doing a lot on the front end to make sure the entire industry doesn't collapse if and when either of these two go into bankruptcy. So, for example, one thing he's done is he's freed up $5 billion for the auto suppliers. And that's one of the concerns, because if Chrysler or GM went under, then you'd have all these suppliers that are relatively anonymous to most people around the country, but
who themselves employ hundreds of thousands of people. And if they went under, then you'd see GM and Honda production in this country go under because they rely on these same suppliers as GM and Chrysler do. So he's trying to do that. He's trying to give the dealers some kind of support so they don't go under as Chrysler and GM, you know, fight through bankruptcy. One thing that he's done, which George Bush would never have done, is appoint somebody, a guy by the name of Ed Montgomery, whose job is basically to try and ease whatever pain there already is and there is going to be in the Midwest as a result of this auto crisis. And, you know, that's the kind of thing Bush would never have done.
No, and from my right-wing friends, they're all just insane about this. You know, going on about, is this a communist country? How dare we dictate what a company does? And my response is, we're basically buying this company. We should have a say in where our money's going, no?
Oh, yeah. And the thing is that, I mean, we already replaced AIG CEO. We already made sure that Citibank replaced their CEO. And for some reason, you know, that's the other thing, this double standard between the way Detroit is treated and Wall Street is treated is unbelievable. But frankly, the country has an interest in making sure that these companies don't go under in an uncontrolled way, which is kind of where Bush was pushing them and where the Republicans in Congress were pushing them, and instead goes under in, if they're going to go under, and I think there's, you know, at least a 50% chance that Chrysler will go into bankruptcy, that there's some kind of transition, that you don't have kind of massive disintegration go on because Chrysler, you know, the other thing that really people don't understand, Chrysler and GM were fighting already. But GM especially was already making the steps they needed to make to turn around.
Right.
And that's been in the last 2-3 years. One of the reasons Ford hasn't had to ask for federal money so far is because they basically bet the farm in 2006. They mortgaged everything down to the blue oval, and that gave them cash that they're using to survive on right now. But both Ford and GM have pretty aggressively started restructuring and moving into more efficient cars and sexier cars and yada yada. And they might have succeeded, and Ford still is surviving, except for the fact that the banksters on Wall Street, you know, completely ruined our finance system, and the auto industry is utterly and entirely at each step of the process. You know, you buy cars, you need credit to do that. You sell cars to consumers, you need credit to do that. You have relationships with suppliers, you need credit to do that. And so when Wall Street did what it did, it just stressed these companies that were trying to turn around and doing a good job of it, and really made it impossible for GM to pull off what it had already made steps to pull off.
Right. You know, at this point, I think the blame game is kind of tiresome, but I have to tell you, I'm getting sick and tired of hearing that all of this is the fault of the workers and this nonsense, oh, they're making $70 an hour, when the reality is pretty much every crisis in our economy is because, as you point out, the banksters who have destroyed our credit markets, who have destroyed the banking industry, that's where the blame should be laid, not on the backs of hardworking Americans.
Well, and that number, too, the $70 an hour, that's a profoundly anti-senior stance because, you know, remember when AIG was getting million-dollar bonuses and all of a sudden Tim Geithner said, oh, no, we can't renegotiate contracts. Well, the $70 an hour accounts for the money that goes into UAW retirees' health care and pensions. And so when people say we want to establish parity between UAW workers and Toyota workers, what they're saying is either we want to take money out of the pockets of seniors, of people who had a work career, worked for 30 years, retired. We want to basically pickpocket retirees, or they're saying we want American car workers to work for a fraction, because that's the only way to bring that number down, to work for a fraction of what Toyota workers work for. So they're saying we want to penalize people who work for American iconic companies instead of working for Ford, I mean, instead of working for Toyota or Honda. And that's what, you know, they may not realize it, but basically they're saying we think it's not okay to renegotiate million-dollar bonuses with, you know, the guys who ruined the economy, but we advocate picking the pocket of a bunch of retirees who earned these benefits, you know, going back 40 years.
I agree with you. We're here with Marcy Wheeler. She's a blogger over at Fire Dog Lake. Some really great stuff over there. Check out the website. You can get to there from our website at thericksmithshow.com. You know, Marcy, you bring up this point about the banksters, and I keep going back to this. None of this stuff would be happening. At least I don't believe. None of this stuff would be happening if it weren't for a handful of criminals on Wall Street who've pretty much thrown us into this mess. There are companies around this country that are going bankrupt, going up, because they cannot get credit to meet payroll the next month. And this is where the problem is. More than a worker making a decent living, more than a pensioner collecting a reasonable pension that they worked their entire lives to get. How do we get out of this?
Well, I mean, what I think we need to do, and, you know, I really support Obama. I voted for him. I think he's, you know, orders of magnitude better than the last guy. But he's surrounded by these people who can't see out of Wall Street. You know, Tim Geithner, Larry Summers, they cannot conceive of, you know, they can't even think about finance. They seem not to be able to think about finance except in terms of Wall Street. And so I think we really need to start pushing to, you know, I understand the need for ensuring that credit continues to flow in this country, but we need to really start pushing to see that credit flows through, you know, mid-sized and local banks. Keep the money local. Make sure that you're making, you know, you're making loans to small businesses around the country in the places that are hardest hit. And stop doing $200 billion bailouts of the people who got us into this mess, because, you know, they have proven over and over and over again they are not good faith partners in this. There was news out this morning that J.P. Morgan, which has gotten, you know, depending on how you count, somewhere between $27 billion and $300 billion of goodies in this whole bailout process, is refusing to work with Chrysler to forgive some of its debt. And it only has $2.5 billion, which is, you know, a small percentage of what they've gotten from taxpayers already. And they're refusing to negotiate on that. They want to push Chrysler into bankruptcy because that will put them ahead of the taxpayers and ahead of the UAW for squeezing money out of Chrysler going forward. And these are people who taxpayers have been supporting for the last year, you know? And so how can we consider J.P. Morgan a good faith negotiator at all when, after, you know, being the beneficiary to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars, they're going to, for $2.5 billion, put, you know, probably 50,000 extra people out of work with Chrysler and do terrible damage to the Michigan economy? It's beyond absurd at this point.
Well, it just goes to show you that, you know, the people who run this country, the moneyed interests, who they're going to support. They're going to support their friends. They don't care about workers. They don't care about the places where people go to work. They would be just happy to see the UAW out of the auto industry, and then they could pay people $10 an hour to work there.
Right, but nobody would be able to buy the car.
But you never hear that other part of it. And for some reason, I don't think they're really concerned about that. They want their short-term profit. They're worried about quarter to quarter, and that's it. They could care less whether a family puts food on the table or not. They could care less what a year holds. It's right now, quick money to put in my pocket.
Yeah, and I think that's the other thing that's been missing from the discussion about the bailout is one of the things that, I mean, a lot of things went wrong. But one of the things that went wrong is, you know, middle-class wages have effectively been stagnant for three, maybe four decades. And given that that's true, you cannot continue to have a growing economy, certainly not a consumer-based economy, until you start raising wages for average people again. But nobody wants to talk about that. Nobody wants to talk about, you know, a lot of factors. But that's until people start making enough to buy things, or until we start making things like cars that other countries want to buy, then, you know, we're going to be continuing to bail out because we're not at a point where we've got a positive economy anymore.
We got about a minute left. One of my listeners asked me this question. Why didn't we just buy the big three? With all the money that we've thrown out, their stock prices are sufficiently down where we could have probably just bought the big three and done with them whatever we wanted. What are your thoughts on something like that?
Well, the problem is you'd still have the debt, and then and the government would still have to. We'd still be, you know, J.P. Morgan would still have the government by the balls, And the other thing is you need to get over, D.C. needs to get over this kind of fear of nationalization. Same thing with AIG. We need to say, we own AIG, no more bonuses. We own AIG, you know, we're not going to bail out the big people anymore. We're going to make sure that we keep our commitments to small banks in Alabama. And there's just this kind of mind set against it in D.C. that, you know, thinks nationalization is the next step to... But that's what happens all the time with the FDIC. When banks go over, they basically put them into receivership, and we need to return to that language and point out how normal it is.
I agree with you. Last question. What do you think would have happened if we would give $1 billion in subsidies to Ford or GM to build a plant like we did to Volkswagen in Tennessee? What if we had policies the last 30 years, like we've done to these other foreign manufacturers, where we just give them tax abatements and give them the world with a ring around it? Do you think we'd be in this problem right now?
You know what is more important is working towards single-payer health care, because the only reason, I mean, you can look at every single, people complain about the bad business decisions that the big three have made, and they have, yeah. And the great majority of them, for example, GM's decision in the 90s to back off of hybrid technology, were very sound business decisions, and people are going to beat me up for this. They were very sound given the profitability levels that GM could expect on those cars, just because they still have to pay health care that, Japan, the Prius is still made in Japan, which means they're paying a lot less in health care costs for those ties to Prius and all of the engineering costs and everything else. So at every stage of the game, the biggest factor that makes the big three less than competitive against Japan and the Japanese manufacturers is that they pay a lot less for healthcare, both for retired workers and for existing workers than American companies do. And we continue, I mean, this happened with steel, this happened with the airline industry. We continue to ask our companies in the United States to be non-competitive because of our healthcare policy, because we're the only developed country that refuses to be civilized about the way we provide healthcare in this country, and it's making our economy completely uncompetitive.
Now, I agree with you, but you know, I go back a couple of years, and Ford and GM and Chrysler, they were right there, you know, the loudest voices against national healthcare, against a single payer plan.
Yeah, I agree, and that's one of the points that I think is totally unforgivable. I also think CAFE standards are a problem. The way they build, they don't actually make efficient cars. They don't give a sign of volume to efficient cars. So what we really need to do is do a gas tax or something like that, which gets consumers to actually pay for the costs on the environment that they are putting carbon into the environment, but also because that's going to get people everywhere else in the world. People buy cheap, efficient, buy gas efficient cars. They don't in the United States because gas is effectively subsidized. And so, you know, that's the other thing, that another kind of political decision that the big three have been really obtuse about, and admittedly. But going forward, we really need to find some way to make sure that the car owners aren't the only ones paying to make sure we build more efficient cars.
Agreed. Marcy Wheeler, Fire Dog Lake, the website. Remember, check out our website, therickssmithshow.com. You get the Marcy from our site there. I appreciate you taking time for us. Very insightful. Thanks for your time.
Great. Thanks for having me.
We're going to take a break. We'll be right back after this. 1-877-960-0960. We're right back.